Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
All times a podcast.
Today we will be returning to the gentleman's art of dressing with economy.
Which I am so excited to return.
By a lounger at the clubs.
That cad.
It is a book published in 1876, a budget fashion guide for Victorian gentlemen. And he has a lot of opinions about how people should and should not be dressing.
And not a lot of tips on how to get things within a budget. So far he's told me a lot of what I shouldn't do, and not a lot of what I should do.
We have reached Chapter 4, Waistcoats.
Ah, thank goodness.
Without wishing to interfere with vested interests, I consider the waistcoat should invariably be of the same material as the coat.
Yeah.
Get it? Vested interests?
Ba-ba-na-na.
It's a vest. Some wear vest and pants alike, but the effect is not so good.
What's the alternative?
Having them not match, or having the waistcoat match the coat.
Oh, okay. So he's saying that the waistcoat should match the coat, but the waistcoat shouldn't match the pants.
Correct.
Okay. I agree with him on that, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, well, he keeps you from having that, like, fucking, like, all velour tracksuit kind of look.
Again, the vest is certain to last longer than the trousers, and then you have on hand a garment that may ill assort with any other of your wardrobe. Clearly, this man's never heard of pattern mixing.
I was gonna say, like, first of all, that was hot in the Victorian era, and second of all, it's hot now. It's always hot.
Take my advice and have 4 pockets in every waistcoat.
Wow. I mean, will do, but why?
The upper side pockets come in very handy. One for a few loose sovereigns, the other for a railway ticket or latchkey.
Yes, I do find that pockets are handy for putting the things I need in.
Apropos of this, pardon a parenthesis.
Did he say that? Wait, does it say pardon a parenthesis?
Yes.
Oh boy.
Some persons mix up gold and silver promiscuously in their pockets.
Promiscuously?
Others carry silver only in pockets, gold and banknotes in their purse.
Okay, all right, this is like a currency thing, right?
Yes.
What does this have to do with fashion?
It has to do with why he wants 4 pockets in your waistcoat.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. All right, let's see where he's going with this.
The best plan is to carry notes only in your purse. When you change a fiver, transfer the sovereigns to the side upper vest pocket above mentioned, and when you change gold into silver, carry the latter in the right-hand lower waistcoat pocket. Watch in left ditto.
That clarified fucking nothing. What? So my silver has to be kept away from my silver that was changed for a gold?
When you change a note into silver and gold, you want to keep the resulting silver, gold, and notes in separate pockets.
Why? Just put the silver in one and the gold in the other.
That's what he's saying.
Oh, wow. He said it so many words that I thought he wanted, like, a pocket for silver change, a pocket for silver that was silver to begin with, and a pocket for your purse that has gold in it.
No.
Okay,
no.
All right. I misunderstood. That's still pretty, like, laborious way to say, like, keep your notes and your change in different pockets.
The advantages claimed for this system of banking are that your money is never mixed.
Why does that matter?
You cannot drop a banknote in taking out gold, nor in the dusk give a sovereign for a shilling to a confiding cabbie.
Wait, where do you keep your shillings?
They're silver. They go in the silver pocket.
Aren't your sovereigns silver?
No, they're gold.
Oh, okay, alright. Great. Now that I have this all sorted out, that's great. He has a lot of faith in, like, the idea that I would remember which pocket has what.
Again, in public places, you need never show money, nor let strangers know how much you have about you.
Well, except if everyone's read this book, then you can actually, like, pat down about 3 pockets and figure it all out.
Many a robbery has been induced by the incautious exhibition of a purse's contents.
Well, that's true.
A light-fingered gentleman, seeing one change a modest half-sovereign, might not let his angry passion rise for so small a pelf.
Angry passion?
Yet the same prestidigitateur would likely exert all his art for the balance one had about if he only saw it.
Does he think that people are stealing money out of anger?
I mean, he's put it in sarcasm quotes, so I don't think he sincerely believes it.
Oh, okay. I do have to add, I love the idea of calling, like, a pickpocket a prestidigitateur. That is a delightful term for pickpocket.
Double-breasted waistcoats.
Finally.
Are not favorites of mine, but if you like them, wear them by all means, and we shall not be worse friends.
God, thank God. Oh, I thought we were going to break up over the double-breasted waistcoat, but...
White vests.
Yes.
Are not only dressy, but luxurious for summer weather. Take care to have them of good quality and well-cut. And then, emphasized in italics, he says, "Avoid the cheap ready-made sort, which show their machine origin in every stitch."
All right. I'm going to echo back that I am not sure how this helps me dress on a budget, because it sounds like you're just telling me to buy a more expensive one.
"They never fit, are impossible to iron, and wholly unsuited for gentlemen."
Why? What's the diff?
Because it's not going to fit your body right if it's off the rack.
Well, yeah, yeah, that's like all off the rack clothes, but like that's also how you shop on a budget. So like if he has an alternative, I'm keen to hear. It seems like his alternative is to just buy the good one.
But the smaller wrinkles and ill-fitting tucks will be more hidden on a dark garment because they will blend in with the shadows, whereas on a white garment, all of those stand out much more starkly.
I see.
"At present, white grounds with fancy stripes are more worn than plain white, and not being made of common material, look more fashionable. Both kinds are expensive, requiring washing and the services of a clever laundress to make them up."
Clever laundress?
Clever laundress.
Not only do I have to pay more up front for these, I also have to find a laundress that is, like, not dull.
Yes.
Amazing. My life is so much simpler now, a lounger.
"If too much starched, they crack and sit badly. If too little, they freely take the dirt."
That's, some people who don't much care for me have said the same of me at times.
"White waistcoats made of paper are advertised, but hitherto I have been mercifully spared the infliction of seeing them."
Paper?
Paper.
What the hell? Well, if I were him, I would want to see that at least once.
I'm just delighted by the phrasing of mercifully spared the infliction of seeing them. "No doubt they are sold and worn, but I infer the cad class only wrap their unclean persons in such pulpy atrocities."
Yeah, that's a sentence. That's a whopper. Pulpy. It's funny because it's paper.
"And now we may begin chapter 5, trousers."
Now I need to know how to accessorize all of these waistcoats I've got.
"A rapid stride of late has been made in the art of cutting trousers." Do you get it?
Oh, because very clever. Yeah. All right. His pun game is upping, like, rapidly.
20 years ago, I remember a few tailors in London, not many, were supposed to have a speciality for making them. These select few, I may remark, did not neglect to charge for their special knowledge. 50 shillings per pair was their general charge, although they condescended occasionally to make for their more favored customers some cheap trousers for 2 guineas.
I'm sorry, could you give me a quick rundown of, like, roughly what all of these currencies mean?
I can. 1 guinea is equal to 21 shillings, aka 1 pound and 1 shilling.
Okay.
So people who pay in guineas rather than pounds have enough money where spending an extra shilling with every pound isn't a problem.
I see. Okay.
So giving a price in guineas kind of implies that you expect only the very wealthy to patronize your shop.
Okay.
Guineas stopped being minted in 1814, but rich people prices continued to be given in guineas throughout the 19th century.
Oh, okay.
Returning to the words of a lounger, "I don't know what occult influence the introduction of peg tops had on the science of pant cutting. It may only be a coincidence, but I date from the time those ridiculous overalls came in and went out, a new era, in fact quite a revolution, in the style of trouser fitting." "Most tailors now can cut these garments, but, owing to low prices charged, few are well made up. The cheap trousers, say from 13 shillings to 18 shillings a pair, are not only shrunk, but positively stretched to make the stuff go as far as possible. The seams are run with a sewing machine, and, from information received, I believe only 1 shilling a pair is allowed for making them. This accounts for gaping flies, pockets of network, and buttons barely tacked on and then generally in the wrong places."
Pockets of network?
By which he means pockets that are more like net than cloth.
Ah, that makes sense.
"They sell them like penny rolls in a baker's shop. Take or leave them."
So I can take it? Am I allowed to wear it? Mr. A. Lounger, am I allowed to wear these?
"I consider it a gigantic waste of money to pay 2 guineas and upwards for bags, as they are facetiously called."
Get your bags on.
"Nor can I conscientiously advise the adoption of the ultra-cheap pantaloons." I feel like the word conscientiously was made specifically for my speech impediment.
It seems like conscientiously. It's a pretty tough one, though, in general.
"Then comes the question where to draw the line between the best and the worst. You must first be the happy possessor of a pair of trousers entirely to your satisfaction in cut. Fitting without a fault, perfection itself."
Okay, wait, alright. Mr. Lounger, we're gonna have issues if you say the secret to having good pants is to have already had a good pair of pants.
If they are sufficiently worn out not to owe you anything, as the saying is, have them ripped and a pattern made of them in brown paper. Get a duplicate of them, and keep in your own possession, as tailors have a knack of mislaying or losing them, if wanted back, either by design or accident. Now find a working tailor, the one who does your odd jobs, and ask him to cut your unmentionables strictly according to pattern.
Unmentionables? But you didn't tell me to have a pattern made of those.
Mind, he is not to measure you, nor put a tape round your manly form.
That would be gay.
Some self-conceited snips will stand on their dignity and say they served their time with Brown, Jones and Company, or other eminent firm of trouser makers, and from the pattern shown will predict other discomfort and misfit if followed. If your lot be to meet with such, there is no use giving them the commission. They will do all they know to spoil the pants.
Could you have that put on my headstone, please? We'll do all they know to spoil the pants.
You must search on until you find one ready to carry out your orders with integrity. The next step is to select your materials in some wholesale cloth shop and purchase enough stuff for three, in textures unlike in color and in make. These must be sent home to yourself in the piece to be operated on in the following way. The stuff bought must now be soaked in a bucket of water, in which is put a handful of salt, which will effectually prevent the colors running. You must insist on the immersion and not take it for granted as done. Ocular demonstration will be necessary. Which means he wants you to stand over your servant's shoulder and watch them do it.
Like, at that point, just do it yourself, dog.
The cloth is then hung to dry thoroughly, and when desiccated, is sent to your trusty snip to be cut according to pattern, basted, fitted on, any little errors corrected, then finished and hot-pressed with iron on wrong side only.
I see A. Lounger is a little bit familiar with the art of tailoring.
One might suspect he is not so much a lounger at clubs as he might be a lounger in a tailor's shop.
Yeah, it sounds an awful lot like he might be a tailor. I'm going to surmise that this is all from a time when it truly was cheaper to have these, to do this all yourself.
Yeah.
Because, like, today it's really hard to imagine, like, go out, get a tailor, buy your wholesale cloth, have a pattern made, like, that would all be outrageously expensive now, but at the time it seems like that actually was a good way to, like, save money.
Unless you have your own sewing machine, in which case, I'm all on your way. By this process, you ensure your materials against shrinking, for some trousers, long today, after a shower of rain, will shrivel into knickerbockers on the morrow.
Yeah, but then you have a new look.
For trousers to fit well, it is of first importance that they be well up in the fork and reach right down to the ground.
I always say that.
Short-legged trousers defeat all attempt at trying to appear well-dressed. If muddy, turn them up. Fortunately, it is the fashion to do so nowadays. And have the back edge round the heel inside bound with a slip of Morocco leather, half an inch deep, which should be flush with the bottom of the legs. This prevents their cutting with the ground. For in this case, they cannot be let down should they shrink and wear.
Well, okay, this guy is definitely a tailor.
Trousers should be cut to fall straight from the knee, plumb line, with a slight spring over boot. The width over boot is invariably 1.5 inches wider than the knee measurement. Most tailors fail to hit off the juste milieu at the termination of their trousers and make them either too gaitery, like the bottom of a carafe, else slope them away horsey or in ostler fashion.
All right, that was a lot of nonsense words just then. Got pretty Lewis Carroll there at the end.
Let this rule be a guide for you. Suppose you wear elastic side boots, for example. See that the line from the back of the heel is horizontal until clear of the elastics, inside as well as out, before the cloth is sloped away. Tailors generally commence hollowing out as soon as the cloth is clear of the boot heel. This is a radical error.
Oh my.
The line I have indicated should be prolonged 1.5 inches on both sides before you begin to turn the royal arch.
This is extremely technical.
Yes, for a gentleman who does not work in a tailor's shop, he sure does know a lot about tailoring, doesn't he?
Yeah. It felt like a joke earlier on when he was just talking about, like, how to make your stuff color fast, which might just be something, like, anyone could learn. But now it's just, like, I don't even know what the purpose of publishing this was unless it was for other tailors.
One word about material, another about patterns. Avoid soft, nappy cloths. The pile quickly wears off and the trousers look threadbare. Choose firm, strong tweeds. Some are like pinwire and wear practically forever.
That's good advice.
In patterns, shun checks, plaids, and chessboard devices.
No. Next question. Those are all very cool. Why would I shun them?
Never order any material so prononcé that you would know it again.
What?
Never get something so striking or distinctive that you could recognize it.
Why? That sounds like a great way to be cool and awesome.
Stripes and long parallel lines are to be avoided.
Why? That's also cool.
When the knees get ever so slightly baggy, the break in continuity of the lines draws attention and makes your pantaloons, though only out of shape, look shabby.
This guy just doesn't like looking cool. This is boring. What patterns am I allowed to have?
Pepper and salt, light and dark brown, and all gray mixtures devoid of any decided pattern will be found most serviceable and are always fashionable.
Ugh, boring.
Do not wear the same trousers 2 consecutive days. If you have a good stock, keep a roster and let the first for duty take its turn. By this means, they will always look fresh and not hackneyed.
Keep a roster of your pants, huh?
Pants roster.
He wants a fucking schedule? I gotta schedule my pants?
Schedule your pants. Which will be difficult because you've bought them all so that you can't recognize any of them on site.
Yeah. This is like, none of them are fucking stand out particularly. How am I supposed to know which was which?
Truly, it is a puzzle.
Oh, this is untenable. This is untenable.
That concludes trousers.
Yeah, wow, and he dropped a lot of fucking harsh information in it.
So how are you feeling, Dee, about our friend, a lounger at clubs?
I'm pretty confused. I don't know, like, other than to say to have them made, get the fabric yourself and have a pattern made that actually fits your whole butt. He hasn't actually suggested much that would, like, help me look fashionable on a budget. In fact, several times he's just told me that if you want it to look good, it's going to be expensive. And then he veered entirely into assuming that I was making the pants myself.
Perhaps he is gently hinting to his readership without offending them that it would be best for them to make their own clothes.
But, like, that's dumb, because sewing is, like, a skill. Like, clothes making is polished skill, and, you know, some of these dudes couldn't wipe their own ass. Like, this guy couldn't, like, he also is assuming that you can't soak your own clothes in salty water. You're gonna, like, watch your servants do it in the same room awkwardly. But then he's like, yeah, why don't you fire up the old Singer and just do it yourself, dipshit? I don't know.
Or he's saying he's writing a book for gentlemen that is more towards aspiring gentlemen who do not yet have servants, but rather than insinuate his readership does not have servants, he gently suggests that they watch the servants do the work and then instruct step by step how, quote unquote, the servants should be doing the work.
Oh, you're saying he's couching it?
Yes. That is my theory. I'm not a doctor.
I mean, that could be true.
Which would be more economical than having servants.
Well, yeah, not having servants does save a lot of money.
I would also like to shout out to Sarah Soes for posting in our Antiques Freaks Friends group an answer to a question we had in our last episode of A Gentleman's Guide to Dressing with Economy.
Yes.
To explain the diagonal fabric, it's the weave. Some fabrics are woven with the warp and weft, the two directions of threads, at right angles to each other. These are called plain weaves, and a lounger does not think they should be used for frock coats. Instead, he says they should be made of fabric with the weft woven diagonally to the warp. These types of fabrics include herringbone weaves and twill. Sometimes it's very textured, sometimes it's not, but the reason a lounger is so set on diagonal versus plain weave has to do with how the fabric drapes and is manipulated. Which makes sense because a frock coat out of all coats has the most draping because of its voluminous skirts.
Yeah, that was an extremely helpful answer to the question we had. Thank you so much. And can I just suggest maybe... Sarah Soes should make a follow-up to How to Dress with Economy.
An annotated edition.
Yeah, much better at explaining things than a lounger.
If you'd like to talk to us about a lounger at the clubs and his strident opinions, you can email us directly, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. You can, like Sarah Soes, post in our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, or you can tag us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com.
If you liked all these strange words we said about pants today, you can just go on down wherever you're listening to this podcast, unless it's Spotify. You can't do it there. And leave us a review. If you're listening on Spotify, go to our Podbean and leave us a review there. Every time you leave us a review, no matter what it says, it gives us a big, big ups and gets our voices into more ears.
We got a 5-star review from Urban Alpaca.
Ooh, you know I like that.
Your podcast is getting better and better. Very informative, especially since I witnessed the Fiesta marmalade covered dish and cream sell for $2,000 at an auction in rural Kansas just a few months ago.
Ooh.
After your episode on insulators, I planned a trip to dig in a 150-year-old multifamily trash pile.
Oh my god.
It hasn't been used since about 1940, so fingers crossed for some cool bottles.
I think the highest compliment that we have received thus far has been that this person listened to our podcast and was inspired to go dig in a trash pile. That is, like, I'm not being sassy. That is, like, so heartwarming.
She concludes, I would love a show on yard-long lithographs.
Yard-long lithographs, yeah?
Yeah.
Consider it in research.
If you would like to listen to deleted scenes or our bonus episodes on Varney the Vampire, the Penny Dreadful for Halloween, or would like to hear Drag King Guy Alias read aloud sections from A Gentleman's Guide to Dressing with Economy, you should check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks.
And may we just say, he does, in fact, dress with economy. His commentary is superb, and you're going to have a good time, I guarantee it.
Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and filling our hearts with love.
So much love.
And thank you in particular for listening.
That's right, you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.